6. Have you really been practicing on barrels, Jerome? They'd laid claim to a bottle of black pomegranate brandy from one of the crates broken open amidst the revellers, and taken it back to their spot by the rail. Barrels, yes. Jean took a sip of the stuff, dark as distilled night, with a sting like nettles beneath the sweetness. He passed the bottle back to her. They never laugh, they never ridicule you, and they offer no distractions.
Distractions?
Barrels don't have breasts.
Ah, so what have you been telling these barrels?
This bottle of brandy, said Jean, is still too full for me to begin embarrassing myself like that.
Pretend I'm a barrel, then.
Barrels don't have
So I've heard. Find the nerve, Valora.
You want me to pretend that you're a barrel, so I can tell you what I was telling barrels back when I was pretending they were you.
Precisely.
Well, he took another long sip from the brandy bottle. You have such hoops as I have never seen in any cask on any ship. Such shiny and well-fit hoops.
Jerome!
And your staves! He decided it was a good time to take another drink. Your staves! So well planed, so tightly fit. You are as fine a cask as I have ever seen, you marvellous little barrel. To say nothing of your bung.
Ahem! So you won't share your sweet nothings?
No, I am utterly emboldened in my cowardice.
Man, what a mouse he is made by conversation,
Esri recited.
Scorns gods, dares battle, and flinches from a maid's rebuke. Merest laugh from merest girl is like a dagger felt, and like a dagger makes a lodging of his breast. Turns blood to milk water and courage to faint memory.
Oh, Lucano, is it? Jean tugged at his beard thoughtfully. Woman, your heart is a mapless maze. Could I bottle confusion and drink it 1,000 years, I could not confound myself so much as you do between waking and breakfast. You are grown so devious that serpents would applaud your passage, would the gods but give them hands.
I like that one, she said. The Empire of 7 days, right?
Right. Esri, forgive my asking, but how the hell do you...
It's no more odd than the fact that you know any of this.
She took the bottle from him, tipped it back for a long draught, and then raised her free hand.
I know. I'll give you a hint. I have held the world from meridian to meridian, in my hands and at my whim. I have received the confessions of emperors, the wisdom of magi, the lamentations of generals.
You had a library? You have a library?
Had, she said. I was the 6th of 6 daughters. I imagine the novelty wore off. Mother and father could afford live companions for the older 5. I may do with all the dead playmates in mother's books.
With her next drink she drained the last of the bottle, and with a grin she tossed it overboard.
So what's your excuse?
My education was, eclectic. Did you ever... When you were little, do you remember a toy of wooden pegs in various shapes that would fit into matching holes on a wooden frame?
Yes, she said. I got my sisters when they tired of it.
You might say that I was trained to be a professional square peg in a round hole.
Really? Is there a guild for that?
We've been working on getting a charter for years.
Did you have a library as well?
After a fashion. Sometimes we'd borrow someone else's without their knowledge or cooperation. Long story. But there's one other reason. I'll give you a verse of your own to guess. After dark, he recited with a flourish, an ass with an audience of 1 is called a husband, An ass with an audience of 200 is called a success.
You were on stage, she said. You were a player, professionally?
Temporarily, said Jean. Very temporarily. I was, well, we... He glanced aft and instantly regretted it.
Ravel, Esri said, then looked at Jean curiously. You and he were... You two are having some sort of disagreement, aren't you?
Can we not talk about him? Jean, feeling bold and nervous at once, put a hand on her arm. Just for tonight. Can he not exist?
We can indeed not talk about him, she said, shifting herself so that her weight rested against his chest rather than the rail. Tonight, she said, nobody else exists.
Jean stared down at her, suddenly acutely aware of the beat of his own heart. The rising moonlight in her eyes, the feel of her warmth against him, the smell of brandy and sweat and salt water that was uniquely hers. Suddenly, the only thing he was capable of saying was,
Jerome Valora, she said, you magnificent idiot. Must I draw you a diagram?
Of?
Take me to my cabin.
She curled the fabric of his tunic in one fist.
I have the privilege of walls, and I intend to use it. At length.
Esri, Jean whispered, never in 100, never in 1,000 years would I say no. But you were cut half to ribbons today, and you can barely stand.
I know, she said. That's the only reason I'm confident I'm not going to break you.
Oh, for that I'm going to...
I certainly hope you will.
She threw her arms wide.
First, get me there.
He picked her up with ease. She settled into his arms and wrapped hers around his neck. As Jean swung away from the rail and headed for the quarterdeck stairs, he found himself facing an arc of 30 or 40 merry watch revelers. They raised their arms and began cheering wildly.
Put your names on a list, hollered Esri, so I can kill you all in the morning.
She smiled and turned her eyes back to Jean.
Or maybe it'll have to wait for the afternoon.
7. Just listen, said Locke. Listen, please, with as open a mind as you can manage.
I'll do my best.
Your deduction about Jerome and myself is commendable. It does make sense, but for the parts that I've concealed until now. Starting with myself, I'm not a trained fighter. I'm a bloody miserable fighter. I have tried to be otherwise, but the gods know it's always comedy or tragedy before I can blink.
That...
Zamira, heed this. I didn't kill 4 men with anything resembling skill. I dropped a beer cask on a man too dumb to look up. I slit the throats of 2 more who got knocked aside by the cask. I did the 4th when he slipped in beer. When everyone else found the bodies, I let them make their own assumptions.
But I know for a fact that you charged those redeemers all by yourself.
Yes, people who are about to die frequently go out of their minds. I should have died 10 seconds into that fight, Zamira. It was Jerome who made it otherwise. Jerome and only Jerome. At that moment, a loud cheer abruptly rose above the noise of the near carnival at the ship's waist. Locke and Zamira both turned in time to see Jean appear at the top of the quarterdeck stairs with Lieutenant Del Mastro in his arms. Neither of them so much as glanced aft at Locke and the captain. A few seconds later, they were vanishing down the companionway.
Well, said Zamira, to win that heart, even for a night, your friend Jerome must be even more extraordinary than I thought.
He is extraordinary, Locke whispered. He continues to save my life time and time again, even when I don't deserve it. He returned his gaze to the orchid's roiling, glowing, monster-haunted wake, which is always more or less. Zemira said nothing, and after a few moments, Locke continued. Well, after he did it again this morning, I slipped and fumbled and ran like hell until the fight was over. That's all. Panic and dumb luck. You still led the boats. You still went up first, not knowing what was waiting for you. All bullshit. I'm a bullshit artist, Zemira. A false facer. An actor. An impersonator. I didn't have any noble motives when I made that request. My life just wasn't worth much if I didn't do something utterly crazy to win back some respect. I faked every second of composure anyone glimpsed this morning.
The fact that you consider that extraordinary only tells me that it really was your first actual battle.
But, Ravel, anyone in command feigns ease when death is near. We do it for those around us, and we do it for ourselves. We do it because the sole alternative is to die cringing. The difference between an experienced leader and an untested one is that only the untested one is shocked at how well they can pretend when their hand is forced.
I don't believe this, said Locke. When I first came aboard, I couldn't impress you enough to make you spit in my face. Now you're making my excuses for me. Zemira, Jerome, and I never worked for the Priori. I've never even met a Priori except in passing. The fact is that we're still working for Maxilan Stragos as we speak.
What?
Jerome and I are thieves. Professional, independent thieves. We came to Tal Vahrar on a very delicate job of our own design. The Archon's intelligence services figured out who and what we were. Stragos poisoned us, a latent poison for which only he can supply the antidote. Until we get it or secure some other remedy, we're his puppets.
To what possible end?
Stragos handed us the Red Messenger, allowed us to take a crew from Windward Rock and built up a parchment trail concerning an imaginary disgruntled officer named Orin Ravel. He gave us our sailing master, the one whose heart seized on us before we hit the storm, and sent us out here on his business. That's how we got the ship. That's how we tweaked Stragos' nose in such an unlikely fashion. All was to his design.
What's he after? Someone in Port Prodigal?
He wants the same thing you gave him last time you crossed paths. He's all but at war with the Priori, and he's feeling his years. If he's going to seize anything resembling popularity ever again, the time is now. He needs an enemy outside the city to bring his army and navy back into favor. That's you, Zemira. Nothing would be more convenient for Stragos than a wider outbreak of piracy near his city in the next few months.
Which is exactly why the brass sea captains have avoided going anywhere near Tal Vahrar for the last 7 years. We learned our lesson the bitter way. If he comes looking for a brawl, we'll duck and run before we'll grant him one.
I know, and so does he. Our job, our mandate, is to find some way to stir up trouble down here regardless. To get you to fly the red flag close enough for common Ferrari to see it from the public outhouses.
How the hell did you ever plan on accomplishing this?
I had some half-assed idea to spread rumors, offer bribes. If you hadn't hit the messenger, I would have tried to kindle a mess myself. But that was before we had any hint to the real state of things out here. Now Jerome and I obviously need your help.
To do what?
To buy time. To convince Stragos that we're succeeding on his behalf.
If you think for 1 second that I'll do anything to aid the Archon...
I don't. And if you think for 1 second that I truly mean to aid him, you haven't been listening. Stragos' antidote is supposedly good for 2 months. That means Jerome and I must be in Tal Vahrar in 5 weeks to get another sip. And if we have no progress to claim, he may simply decide to fold his investment in us.
If you have to leave us to return to Tal Vahrar, she said, that's unfortunate. But you can find an independent trader in Port Prodigal. They're never more than a few days apart. We have arrangements with a number of them that call in Tal Vahrar and Vel Verazzo.
You'll have enough money from your shares to buy passage.
Zamira, you have more wit than this. Listen, I have spoken personally to Stragos several times. Been lectured is more the word, and I believe him. I believe that this is his last chance to put his foot down on the Priory and truly rule Tal Varar. He needs an enemy, Zamira. He needs an enemy that he knows he can crush. Then it would be madness to acquiesce to his plan by provoking him. Zamira, this fight is coming to you regardless of your intentions. You are all he has. You are the only foe that suits. He's already sacrificed a ship, a veteran sailing master, a galley crew's worth of prisoners, and a considerable amount of his own prestige just to put Jerome and me in play. As long as we're out here, as long as you're helping us, then you'll know exactly where his plans rest, because we'll be running them from your ship. If you ignore us, I have no idea what he'll try next. All I know is that he will have other designs, and you won't be privy to them. What good will it do me, said Zamira, to play along with you and rouse Tal Varar to the point that Stragos achieves his desire? We couldn't best his fleet 7 years ago with twice our present numbers. You're not the weapon, said Locke. Jerome and I are the weapons. We have access to Stragos. All we need is an answer to the poison, and we'll turn on the son of a bitch like a scorpion in his breech clout. For this I dangle my ship, my crew, and my children in easy reach of an enemy far beyond my strength? Zamira, you spoke of the Sea of Brass as though it were a fairy kingdom, infinitely mutable, but you are lashed tight to Port Prodigal, and you must know it. I don't doubt that you could sail for any port in the world and fetch it safely, but could you live anywhere else as you do here? Sell your goods and captured ships as easily? Pay your crew so regularly? Know the waters and your fellow outlaws so well? Lurk in trade lanes half as far from the navy of any great power? This is the strangest conversation I have had in years, said Zamira, returning her hat to her head, and probably the strangest request anyone has ever made of me. I have no way of knowing if anything you say is true, but I know this ship and how fast she can run if all else fails, even Port Prodigal. That is, of course, one option. Ignore me. Wait until Stragos finds some other way to have his war, or a likeness of a war, and then fly. To some other sea, some harder life. You said yourself you can't beat the Archon's navy. You can't strike at Stragos by force of arms. So consider this. Every other choice you have will sooner or later turn into withdrawal and retreat. Jerome and I represent the sole means of attack that you will ever possess. With your help, we could destroy the Arcanate forever. How? That's a sort of work in progress. Possibly the least reassuring thing you've... If nothing else, interrupted Locke, we know that there are powerful forces in Tal Varar balanced against the Archon. Jerome and I could contact them, involve them somehow. If the Arcanate were abolished, the Priory would hold Tal Varar by the purse strings. The last thing they'd want is embroilment in a useless war that might create another popular military hero. Standing here at the stern of my ship, weeks away from Tal Varar, how can you speak with any certainty of what can be done with that city's merchants and politicians? You said yourself that I had a talent for dishonesty. I often think it the only skill I have worthy of recommendation. But...
Dracasha, this is intolerable!
Locke and Zamira whirled, once again in unison, to find Scholar Tregann standing at the head of the companionway. She stepped toward them, limping without the support of her cane, and in her outthrust arms wriggled a chitinous black nightmare, multi-legged and gleaming in the lantern light, a spider the size of a cat. She held it belly outward, and its gleaming fangs twitched indignantly.
"Dear gods, it certainly is," said Locke.
"Tregann, what the hell is Zekasis doing out of her cage?"
Your lieutenant has commenced an assault on the partition between our quarters, hissed Tregahn. Intolerable noise and commotion. She was lucky to shatter only one cage with all of her knocking about, and luckier still that I was there to restrain this blameless lady.
So, wait, you keep that thing in your quarters? Locke was relieved to discover that it hadn't been prowling the ship, but only marginally so.
Where do you think wound silk comes from, Ravel? Quit flinching! Zacassis is a delicate and timid creature.
Tregahn, said Drakasha, as a physicker you must be familiar with the courtship habits of the adult human female.
Yes, but 6 feet from my head is an insufferable intrusion.
Tregahn, in my opinion, interrupting Ezri at the moment would be an insufferable intrusion. The quartermaster's compartment across the passage is open. Fetch the carpenter to give Zek temporary accommodations and pitch your hammock in Gwilym's space.
I shall remember this indignity, Drakasha.
Yes, for approximately 10 minutes, until some new vexation arises to claim your full attention.
Should Del Mastro do herself some injury through her exertions, said Tregahn primly, she may find another physicker to serve her needs, and I dare say that she may use her own abdomen to spin silk for her bandages.
I'm sure Isri's abdomen is otherwise occupied, scholar. Please find someone to build that thing a home for the night. You won't need to say much to convince them of your urgency. As Tregahn stomped off in a huff with her delicate and timid creature waving its legs in protest, Locke turned back to Zamira with one eyebrow raised. Where did you ever... The punishment for insolence to the Nikoran royal family is to be hung out to starve in an iron cage. We were in Nikora doing a bit of smuggling. Tregahn was hanging there doing a bit of dying. Most of the time I don't regret cutting her down.
Well, what do you say to my...
mad proposal?
Zamira, I don't need you to sail into Talvarar Harbour. Just give me something to buy another few months of Stragos indulgence. Sack a ship or two near Talvarar. Quick and easy work. You know Jerome and I will be the first over the side for you. Just let them run for the city and spread a bit of panic. Then send us in one night by boat. Let us do our business, and we'll be back with a better idea of how to turn the situation.
Attack ships flying the Varari flag, then get close enough to the city to let you slip in by boat? Wait at anchor with a 5,000 solari bounty on my head? Now that is an injustice, Zamira, whatever else I've done to merit suspicion. If Jerome and I merely wanted to slip back to Talvarar, why would we have risked our necks in your attack this morning? And if I wanted to continue deceiving you or spying on you, why didn't I just play along with your conclusion that we were agents of the Priori? Jerome and I quarreled this morning. If you spoke to Jibril before you pulled me out of your hold, you must know that I'm a divine of the 13th, the Crooked Warden. You're our people, more or less, our kind. It's a matter of propriety. Jerome insisted that we tell you the truth, that we needed you as willing allies and not as dupes. I'm ashamed to say that I was too angry to agree. But he was right, and it's not just fucking sentiment, it's hard truth. I don't think Jerome and I can pull this off unless you aid us with full knowledge of what we're up to. And if you can't or won't do that, I think you've got a hell of a mess coming your way. Soon.
Drakasha settled her right hand on the pommel of one of her sabers and closed her eyes, looking tired and vexed.
Before anything else, she said at last, apart from all other considerations, we need to put in at Port Prodigal. I have cargo to sell, stores to buy, a prize to dispose of, and crew to meet up with. We're several days out, and will be several days there. I will think on what you've said. One way or another, I'll give you an answer after we've done our business there.
Thank you.
So it's Leocanto, then?
Just keep calling me Ravel, said Locke. Easier for everyone.
So be it. You're on the merry watch, and you won't be shifted back to duty watches until tomorrow afternoon. I suggest you make good use of the night.
Well, Locke glanced down at his leather cup of blue wine, suddenly thinking that maybe he could do with a few more, and perhaps a dice game to lose himself in for a few hours. If the gods are kind, I already have. Good night, Captain Drakasha.
He left her alone at the taffrail, silently studying the monster that lurked in the orchid's wake.
8.
Did that hurt?
Whispered Ezri, tracing a finger across the sweat-slicked skin above Jean's ribs.
Did it hurt? Gods above, woman, no. That was...
I don't mean that.
She gave him a firm poke in the scar that arced across his abdomen beneath his right breast.
That!
Oh, that. No, it was wonderful. Someone came after me with a pair of thieves' teeth. Felt like a warm breeze on a fine spring day. I loved every second of...
Oof! Ass!
Where did you get such sharp elbows? You grind those things against a whetstone, or... Oof!
Ezri lay on top of Jean on the demi-silk hammock that took up most of the space in her compartment. It was just barely long enough for him to lie with one arm above his head, brushing the interior bulkhead of the ship's starboard side, and he could have spanned its width between his outstretched arms. An alchemical trinket the size of a coin provided a faint silver light. Ezri's witchwood dark curls were touched with fey highlights. Scattered strands gleamed like threads of spider silk in moonlight. He ran his hands through that damp forest of hair, massaged her warm scalp with his fingernails, and she let her muscles go slack with a gratifying moan of relaxation. The motionless air in the compartment was thick with sweat and the trapped heat of their first endless, frantic hour together. The place was also, Jean noticed for the first time, utterly wrecked. Their clothes were scattered in purest chaos. Ezri's weapons and few possessions littered the deck like navigational hazards. A small net containing a few books and scrolls hung from a ceiling beam and tilted toward the compartment door, indicating that the whole ship was heeled over to larboard.
Ezri, he muttered, staring at the stiffened canvas partition that formed their left-hand wall. A pair of large feet and a pair of small feet had given it a serious denting.
Ezri, whose cabin did we nearly kick our way into a little while ago?
Oh, Scholar Tregann's. Who told you to stop doing that to my hair?
Oh, much better.
Will she be pissed off?
More so than usual?
Ezri yawned and shrugged.
She's free to find a lover of her own and kick it back whenever she pleases. I'm too preoccupied to be diplomatic.
She kissed Jean's neck and he shivered.
Besides, night hasn't nearly run its course yet. We may kick the whole damn thing down if I have my way, Jerome.
Then it's your way we'll have, said Jean, gently shifting the weight of her body until they were lying on their sides, face to face.
He ran his hands as carefully as he could over the stiff bandages on her upper arms, the only thing she couldn't in good sense take off. His hands moved to her cheeks and then to her hair. They kissed for the sort of endless moment that only exists between lovers whose lips are still new territory to each other.
Jerome, she whispered.
No. Do something for me, Ezri. In private. Never call me that.
Why not?
Call me my real name.
He kissed her neck, put his lips to one of her ears, and whispered into it.
Jean,
she repeated.
Gods, yes. Say that again.
Jean Estevan Tannen. I like that.
Yours and yours alone,
Jean whispered.
Something in return, she said. Ezrian d'Astiri de la Mastron. Dame Ezrian of the House of Mastron. Nicora.
Really? You have an estate or something?
Doubt it.
Spare daughters who run away from home don't tend to receive holdings. She kissed him again, then ruffled his beard with her fingertips. In fact, with the letter I left mother and father, I'm sure I was disinherited at the best possible speed.
Gods, I'm sorry.
Don't be. She moved her fingers down to his chest. These things happen. You keep moving. You find things here and there that help you forget.
You do indeed,
he whispered, and then they were too busy to talk for a good long while. 9. Locke was pulled out of his vivid thicket of dreams by a number of things. The rising heat of day, the pressure of 3 cups of wine in his bowels, the moans of the hungover men around him, and the sharp prick of claws from the heavy little creature sleeping on the back of his neck. Struck by a sudden foggy memory of Scholar Tregann's spider, he gasped in horror and rolled over, clutching at whatever was clinging to him. He blinked several times to clear the veil of slumber from his eyes, and found himself struggling not with a spider but with a kitten, narrow-faced and black-furred.
"The hell?" Locke muttered.
"Mew,"
the kitten retorted, locking gazes with him. It had the expression common to all kittens, that of a tyrant in the becoming. "I was comfortable, and you dared to move," those jade eyes said. "For that you must die." When it became apparent to the cat that its 2 or 3 pounds of mass were insufficient to break Locke's neck with one mighty snap, it put its paws on his shoulders and began sharing its drool-covered nose with his lips. He recoiled.
"That's regal," said someone to Locke's left.
"Regal? No, it's ridiculous." Locke tucked the kitten under his arm like a dangerous alchemical device. Its fur was thin and silky, and it began to purr noisily. The man who'd spoken was Jabril. Locke raised his eyebrows when he saw that Jabril was lying on his back, stark naked.
"His name," said Jabril, "Regal. He's got that white spot on his throat, and a wet nose, right?"
"The very one."
"Regal, you've been adopted, Ravel. Ain't that ironic?"
My life's ambition realized at last. Locke glanced around the half-empty undercastle. Several of the new orchids were snoring loudly. One or two were crawling to their feet, and at least one was sleeping contentedly in a pool of his own vomit. Or so Locke assumed. Jean was nowhere to be seen.
"And how was your evening, Ravel?"
Jabril pushed himself up on both elbows.
"Virtuous, I think."
"My condolences," Jabril smiled. "You ever met Malakasti from the Blue Watch? Got the sort of red hair and the daggers tattooed on her knuckles? Gods, I don't think she's human."
"You vanished early from the party, I'll say that."
"Yeah, she had some demands. And some friends."
Jabril massaged his temples with his right hand.
"That bosun from Red Watch, fellow with no fingers on his left hand, had no idea they taught gods-fearing Ashmiri lads them sorts of tricks. Phew!"
"Lads? I didn't know you, stalked that particular quarry."
"Yeah, well, seems I'll try anything once," Jabril grinned. "Or 5 or 6 times, as it turns out."
He scratched his belly and seemed to become aware of his lack of clothes for the first time.
"Hell, I remember owning breeches as recently as yesterday."
Locke emerged into sunlight a few minutes later with Regal still tucked under his arm. As Locke stretched and yawned, the cat did the same, attempting to wriggle out of Locke's grasp and presumably climb back atop his head. Locke held the tiny fellow up and stared at him.
"I'm not getting attached to you," he said. "Find someone else to share your drool with."
Well aware that any mistreatment of the little fellow might get him thrown over the side, he set the kitten down and nudged him with a bare foot.
"You sure you're authorized to give orders to that cat?"
Locke turned to find Jean standing on the forecastle steps, just finishing pulling a tunic on.
"Gotta be careful. He might be a watchmate."
If he acknowledges any rank, I think he puts himself somewhere between Drakasha and the 12. Locke stared up at Jean for several seconds. Hi.
Hello.
Look, there's a lot of tedious, I was an ass sort of conversation to stumble through, and I'm still feeling a bit victimized by that blue wine, so let's just assume...
I'm sorry, said Jean.
No, that's my job.
I meant, we really found our jagged edges again, didn't we?
If there's one thing a battle isn't, it's calming on the nerves. I don't blame you for what you said.
We can think of something, said Jean quietly and urgently. Something together. I know you're not... I didn't mean to insult you.
I deserved it, and you were right. I spoke to Drakasha last night.
You did?
I told her. Locke grimaced, stretched again, used the motion to cover a series of hand signals. Jean followed, his eyebrows rising. Didn't mention Bonds Magi, Sinspire, Camor, real names. All else, truth.
Really? Said Jean.
Yes. Locke stared down at the deck. I said you were right.
And how did she...
Locke mimed a roll of the dice and shrugged. We're for Port Prodigal before anything else happens, he said. Chores to do. Then she said, she'll let us know.
I see. And so...
Did you have a good night?
Gods, yes.
Good. About, what I said yesterday.
You don't need...
I do. It was the dumbest of all the things I said yesterday. Dumbest and least fair. I know I've been hopeless for so long I wear it like armor. I don't begrudge you anything you have. Savor it.
I do, said Jean. Believe me, I do.
Good. I'm no one you want to learn from.
So...
All's well, Master Valora. Locke smiled, pleased to feel the corners of his mouth creeping up of their own volition. But that wine I was talking about...
Wine? Did you...
Crap lines, Jerome. I need to piss before my innards explode. You're blocking the stairs.
Ah.
Jean stepped down and slapped Locke on the back.
My apologies. Free yourself, brother.
This is the end of the CD. The audiobook continues on the next CD.